Tokyo Podcast episode number 26.
On this show, I look over the past 6 months of my life here in Japan. I go over some of the struggles and difficulties I had, as well as offer some websites that made things a lot easier. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Tokyo Podcast. I am your host, Anthony Joe. And on today's show, I am going to be talking to the webmaster of the website gettojapan.com. His name is Fab, and he's from Germany, and he runs this website called gettojapan.com, which offers all sorts of articles and advice on how you can move to Japan. I know a lot of people are interested in living and working in Japan, and so their website will help you get set up in your new life here in Japan. And I thought it would be interesting to talk to Fab because I've been in Japan now for exactly 6 months, and so I wanted to briefly talk about some of the concerns that I had before I moved to Japan, and how do I feel about those concerns now. But before we get to that, I wanted to mention another website, which I actually forgot to mention on my show last week. Last week's show, if you'll recall, was my special show on the one-year anniversary of the Tohoku earthquake. And I interviewed four different people who had four different stories in regards to the earthquake. And one thing I forgot to mention was this website called shoptohoku.com. And this is a very interesting website in that it tries to give the people of the Tohoku area an outlet to sell their services and products. As you know, that area is still in the recovery stage. And so anything that the people up there can do to try to generate some income is always a good thing. So this shoptohoku.com website, what they do is they've gone up to that area and they've found people who have businesses, and they're putting their businesses and services online. So if you purchase items through this shoptohoku.com website, that money will go to the people in the Tohoku area who need it the most. So if you're interested in helping out the people of Tohoku by doing a little bit of online shopping, visit the website shoptohoku.com. So before I moved to Japan, I had three main concerns about living here. And those three things were cost of living, how expensive everything was going to be, housing, finding an apartment, and language. With limited English being spoken here and my limited Japanese, I was worried about how easy or difficult it would be to set everything up. And especially coming from Bangkok, I anticipated that the move to Japan was going to be a lot different, because getting your life set up in Bangkok is extremely easy. You could really get it all done within a few days if you really wanted to. If you absolutely don't know what you're doing, it may take you a week or so at the most. I mean, it would take you literally a week to go from having nothing to getting an apartment, getting a mobile phone, getting an internet, getting a train card, and all that stuff. You could do it within a week easily. Here in Japan, it takes a little bit longer. So now that I've been here for 6 months, I kind of wanted to offer my thoughts on those three concerns that I had to anybody else who's listening to this who might be in a similar position, who's thinking about moving to Japan and may have the same concerns. So let's start with cost. As I'm sure you've heard many times, Tokyo is an expensive city. And this is something that's repeated many times in the press. And however, the problem with this kind of blanket statement is it's hard to get an accurate figure on what is expensive, because expensive is different for everybody. For some people, spending $5,000 a month on an apartment is expensive. For others, it's not. So it's hard to get kind of an accurate figure on what was expensive here in Japan. I really wanted some actual numbers so I could decide for myself if that was expensive or not. And this is a little bit hard to find. The one really good source that I did find is a YouTube video by a gentleman named Tokyo Kuni, who has a video on YouTube called Tokyo Cost of Living. And in this video, he breaks down some of his monthly bills and expenses that he has to spend every month here in Tokyo. So if you're looking for some actual numbers, I definitely recommend going on YouTube and do a search for Tokyo Kuni. It's C-O-O-N-E-Y. And his video is Cost of Living in Tokyo. And he gives you some actual numbers about what his bills were. And so I really studied that video a lot before I came here. And so now that I've been here for 6 months, I can say that I don't actually find Tokyo to be that much more expensive than when I was living in Germany or when I was living in Canada. For a city of its size, certainly it's more expensive than, you know, some other smaller cities around the world, but really it's not that crazy expensive. If you come here on holiday and you're eating out in restaurants all the time, taking taxis everywhere, yes, that's going to get expensive. But in actually living here, I find some things are a little bit more and some things are not as expensive. So what were some of the things that I find expensive? Well, one of the things I find expensive is transportation, getting around the city. Tokyo, as you know, has got this really great rail network. You can get from point A to point B on the train with no problems. And it's a very convenient way of getting around the city. However, my experience is it's kind of a costly way to get around the city. I think for people who've been here a long time, it probably isn't. But for me, I'm finding it's very easy to spend $10, $15 a day to get around Tokyo. And what I do is I buy this train pass card called Suica card, and I just put money on it. And when I go through the ticket machine, it just debits the card. And I'm amazed at how fast the credit that I put on this card goes down. It's not uncommon for me to spend like $50 a week on transportation. And I know for some of you listening to this around the world in a large city like maybe New York or London, that doesn't sound like a lot. But for me, coming from Thailand, it's just a bit of a sticker shock, because in Thailand, I would take a taxi or motorcycle taxi everywhere, and the average fare for me would be about $1 or $2. So I'm spending maybe $10, $20 a week, whereas here I'm spending $10, $20 a day. So the biggest thing that I've been surprised in the cost is transportation. Now, I understand though, from people who've lived here a while, have told me that the routes that I kind of tend to take are a bit more expensive. Apparently, if you take the local train or something like that, you can reduce the costs considerably. The Yamanote line, some of these main ones that I tend to take, are more expensive. And the reason why I take these is because I'm familiar with them and they're relatively easy to kind of figure out where you need to go. So I'm sure there's probably ways that you could even lower the transportation costs. But for me right now, being able to get from point A to point B reliably outweighs any cost benefit. So for me, I found transportation is a bit of an expense. As far as rent goes, I used to live in Vancouver, which was an extremely expensive city, and the average price for, say, a one bedroom apartment in Vancouver would be between, say, a low end of, I'm guessing, around $700-$800 to a high end of, say, $1,500. I don't know. I haven't lived in Vancouver in over 5 years, so prices might have changed. But from what I gather, if you're looking for like a one bedroom apartment, the low end, you're probably around $700-$800, high end of, you know, double that, $1,500. For me, I was living in a two bedroom place in Vancouver and I was paying $1,800 a month. And so here in Japan, I found that the prices are similar to what I was paying in Vancouver. The only difference is the apartment is a lot smaller than mine in Vancouver. So, for example, my apartment now, I pay about $800 a month, and it's a pretty small apartment. It's like a 26 square meters. It's pretty small. So, and relatively to the size as what I was paying in compared to Canada, yes, it's a lot more expensive. But then I also think that I'm really close to the mainland, like downtown Tokyo, and I'm actually really happy with the size of my place. It doesn't really bother me at all. That's one thing you have to consider when you're moving to Japan, is that especially if you're coming from America, we got really large apartments in America. So when you come to Japan and you look at your place and you're thinking, man, I'm spending $800 for what looks like a closet. You just gotta factor in location and how close you are to a train line and all those other kind of things. So my apartment that I'm in now, it's a little bit small. Well, it's actually a lot smaller than what I was staying in Canada, but the location for me is extremely convenient. I am like less than 5 minute walk from both the metro and the train line. I have a bunch of really great international restaurants all around me. So I really enjoy the location of my apartment. So the small size is not a concern for me because the location is key. So when you come here, you gotta just kind of think about your the cost of your apartment relative to where you are in size and all those kind of things. Kind of try to throw out a little bit of the ideas you had back home about what size a one-bedroom apartment should be. Things are going to be smaller here, but also you got other things to factor into. And a really good source of information for apartments, and it's one that I use, is called Tokyo Rent. And this company is a company that specializes in helping foreigners get apartments. And what I liked about Tokyo Rent is that they don't have many of the requirements that the Japanese real estate companies have. I did contact a few Japanese real estate agents when I was here, and they showed me some apartments, but they require a lot more paperwork and a lot of extra fees, which I wasn't particularly interested in paying. What I found interesting is that if you hire an agent, you have to pay that agent usually equivalent to 1 month's rent to find you an apartment, which is usually a little bit, it's backwards to how we work in Canada, is that usually the landlord pays that. So, you know, moving into your new apartment in Japan, if you go to a Japanese real estate agency, you can end up spending 3 or 4 months worth of rent just in fees. And so what I like about Tokyo Rent is they don't do that. They don't do it that way. They just, you just pay a 1 month deposit and then that's it. And they have all their properties listed on their website. You can see all their photos and everything. So for me, when I looked at the apartment on Tokyo Rent, it looked really small. But once I actually saw the place in person, I thought it wasn't too bad. The location is really great. And I save 2 or 3 months worth of rent and fees by going with them. And so that's why I chose to go with Tokyo Rent. So I definitely would recommend them. As far as my monthly bills, gas bill, electric bill, and all those other kind of things, I would recommend once again watching that Tokyo Kuni video, because his expenses are pretty similar to what I'm paying, and he does a really good job of breaking it down. But like I said, like I don't find it to be that much more expensive than what I was paying back in Canada. I guess utilities here are a little bit more expensive than what I was paying in Canada, because in Canada we have natural gas, I had a natural gas fireplace, and that was paid by the strata of my building, so I didn't have to pay for it. Here, we have this air conditioner that pumps out heat and walls that are paper thin with no insulation whatsoever. So all the heat that this air conditioning pumps out goes right outside. So my monthly heating bill is a little bit more, and I imagine in the summertime the electricity bill will be even higher because of the air conditioning and all that stuff. But for your utilities, your gas, water, all those kind of things, definitely check out that Tokyo Kuni video, because he does a really good job of showing you what those items will cost. And the last thing I wanted to mention was language. Living in Bangkok, it's very easy, and embarrassingly so, to live in Bangkok without speaking any Thai. The main tourist, or not tourist, but the main expat area is not very spread out. So it's actually very condensed. So when you first move there, you will want to live in an area that has a lot of services and things that you will need to get started. And that particular area is not very spread out. So everything within that area will have some kind of English in it. So for example, if you go to a restaurant, chances are they'll have an English menu. The staff will speak English. Almost all the shopping malls there have signs in English. Staff speak English. And it's actually really embarrassing because when I first moved to Thailand, I actually knew more Thai when I first moved there than when I left. And the reason why is because when I first moved there, I didn't know how much English Thai people spoke, so I studied it. And then what happened is over my time there, I realized that the Thais actually speak some pretty good English. So in the beginning, I would go into a store and I would try to struggle to order something or ask a question in my Thai, and the staff would just turn around and answer me in perfect English. And so what happened is over the years I was there, I would just walk into a store and I would just automatically start speaking English. And 90% of the time, the Thai staff would respond in English. I hated doing that because I hated assuming that they would speak English, but they almost always did, and it just made things so much easier. So moving to Japan here, I was really concerned about the language issue because in my previous times here, I noticed that there wasn't a lot of English being spoken or available. So, and I've got to admit, like, struggling with the language issue has probably been one of the hardest things that I've had to deal with, especially when I had to get my apartment set up, like trying to phone the internet company to get the internet set up and trying to coordinate with the delivery company to deliver my furniture and all that kind of stuff. That was really, really difficult because I just couldn't communicate with them at all. And I had to rely on friends who had been here for a while and ask them to translate and all that kind of stuff. So the language definitely has been a bit of a challenge here. Now that I've kind of settled in, it's gotten a little bit easier. But definitely in the beginning, I could see why so many other foreigners rely upon their school or their company or friends to get things done, because it does make things a lot easier. So if you are coming to Japan, if you're in the planning stages now, don't forget to start to practice your Japanese, because it will make things a lot easier for you when you get here. If you're behind a bit in your studies, then try to, you know, make some Japanese friends or something like that, because they're very willing to help out. But it does help if you can speak a little bit. So the language issue is something that I'm still kind of dealing with. And I hope soon that my Japanese level gets to the point where I can kind of freely walk around and interact with anybody and not have to resort to drawing pictures on my iPhone or using hand signals. But definitely, I think the biggest difficulty I've encountered so far here in the beginning, it hasn't been cost, it hasn't been finding an apartment or anything kind of stuff. It has been dealing with the language. And that's really the one thing that I could have taken care of myself before I moved here if I'd studied a bit more. So my advice to anyone who's got those three concerns is, you know, budget accordingly, look online. You can figure out how much things are. It's not crazy expensive, but you should watch your budget. There are many ways of how you can save money once you're here. There's shops like the 100 yen store, the 100 yen store, where almost everything in it is like a dollar. And you can find all sorts of things for your apartment in those stores. It's really great. Furniture stores like Nitori have discount furniture, and they'll also do free delivery. And on Craigslist as well, if you look on Craigslist, many foreigners who are leaving Japan offer their appliances and stuff like that for free. So you can fully furnish your apartment for relatively low cost if you search around. And once again, finding an apartment, I definitely recommend Tokyo Rent. I found the whole process then was quite easy. And my goal at the time, I think they charge a bit more than if I'd gone with a Japanese company. But for me at the time, I was living in a hotel and I didn't want to spend, you know, weeks and months in a hotel. So I wanted to get an apartment as painlessly and easily as possible. And Tokyo Rent made that available. And then the last one was just language. And it's something that I should have studied more. And I will continue to study as I stay here. I am extremely pleased to welcome to the show today a gentleman named Fab, who runs a website called gettojapan.com. And I can tell you from my own personal experience that moving to Japan for the first time is definitely a challenge. Things here are a lot more difficult than you will find in your home country, not even factoring the language into play. You got tons of paperwork, confusing train lines, and coming from Thailand, it has been a rather unique experience for me to move to Japan. So I am extremely pleased to talk to Fab today, whose website specializes in helping gaijin or foreigners get to Japan. Welcome to the show, Fab.
Thanks for having me tonight.
So let's talk about your website. It's called gettojapan.com.
Yes.
And can you tell us how you got this site started?
Well, I started the site with my friend Drew, who's still in Canada. And I met him when I was studying at a Japanese language school at a Japanese university 2 years ago, 3 years ago already. And we got really close at that time. And we're thinking about, because we went through a lot of trouble when we came to Japan, and we were like looking for information online. We found a lot of good resources, but they're all like all over the internet. There was not one single site where you can get all the information you need when you want to go to Japan. So we're like, why don't we have the information, we have the knowledge, we have the experience, why don't we set up a website? And that's how we started.
It is a bit of a challenge when you get here, isn't it? Like it can be a bit overwhelming, you know, you don't realize how extensive it is.
Yeah, it is. It totally is.
You see like the images and the movies and whatnot, and you think, man, it'd be cool to go to Japan. But then you get there and you just get hit with this wall of Japanese-ness.
Yes, totally.
And you can be overwhelmed very quickly. Was that your experience when you first got here?
Yeah, when I first got here, I came here the first time. It was for volunteering at a home for the elderly somewhere in Gunma, which is pretty in the middle of nowhere, actually. And so I didn't really enter came down to Shibuya or any other place with a lot of people, but when I came to Shibuya the first time, I was really overwhelmed. And I actually came in through some little side streets, and then with some friends showed me around, and then they showed me the crossing, the famous crossing in Shibuya, and they're like, welcome to Shibuya. And I looked at all the lights and all the people on a Saturday night, I'm like, wow, this is just amazing. It totally blew me away.
So your first entry point into Japan was a small town?
Yeah, pretty much.
And you're originally from Germany, is that correct?
Yeah, exactly.
So you moved from Germany to Japan.
Yeah.
And instead of jumping into Tokyo or Osaka like most people do,
Yeah. You
moved to a small town to help elderly people.
Yeah, that was only during my summer vacation when I was in university. But it was planned that I go to Japan for studying at a Japanese university. But before I go to Japan, I was like, I've never been there, but I want to know how it is before I go there for 1 year.
Right.
So I decided to volunteer at a home for the elderly, and through a Japanese teacher of mine in Germany, she helped me because she had the connection to a home for the elderly in Gunma. So I could had the great chance to work there for like 1 month. With all the stuff there, and I ate breakfast, lunch, dinner with the people living there, accompanied them when they went grocery shopping, or helped them when they cleaned up the places and everything. And well, yeah.
Speak Japanese before you got there?
That was my second year in university. So yeah, I spoke. Yeah, of course I was not fluent, but yeah, I spoke.
And what was that experience like dealing with these elderly Japanese? Because obviously, I'm sure, like, you know, Japan is a very modern country, but in some ways, it's very backwards in certain ways, especially when it comes to foreigners. I mean, even in Tokyo here, you don't see many foreigners. And there's not a lot of outside influence in Japan. And this is in Tokyo. So I imagine when you go to some small remote town, it's even less so.
Yeah, there were actually no foreigners. Like, it was the only one to that specific home for the elderly. Apparently, there go German volunteers, like usually 10, was t- no, two or three volunteers every year because it has some connection to Germany. Mm-hmm. And, but at that time, I was the only one. And then, like, the home for the elderly was like 30 or 40 minutes by car to the next big city. And even the big city, which is not really a big city, but for that area, it's a big one. There were no foreigners. I didn't see any. Maybe there was some other Asians, but I didn't see any white people there. And when I walked into, what was it, like Dunkin' Donuts or something, some donut place, like a group of high school guys, they were like freaking out. They were looking at me and like screaming and taking pictures. I'm like, what's going on, right? It was interesting. It was really interesting.
What was the reaction like for the elderly people you were working with? What was their reaction to you?
Well, they were used to German volunteers.
Right, okay.
So they were totally open and talked to me a lot and asked me questions, invited me to have beers with them and stuff.
That was pretty good.
That's actually really, must have been a good experience for you, eh? Kind of see another part of Japan that most gaijin won't ever get to see.
Exactly, yeah.
Wow. So you started there, and after that, did you move to Tokyo?
Well, then I moved back. I stayed there for 1 month, then traveled across Japan for 2 weeks using the Japan Rail Pass. And I'll experience a little bit like backpacking right down to Kyushu. Then I went back to Germany, studied for another year. Then I came back to Japan to study at a Japanese university for one semester only. That's where I met Drew. And after that, after one semester, I moved to... Well, the university was pretty close to Tokyo, but it's actually Saitama. And after that, I started an internship at a German company here in Tokyo, in Shibuya, and did an internship there for 7 months. And yeah, there were a lot of interns. So especially like really international interns from like Thailand, America, Korea, Sweden, France. It was really international. It was a really great experience.
And when you were here in Tokyo, obviously quite a change from where you were before. Yeah. What were some of the initial challenges that you faced?
Well, the biggest problem back then, even like after 2 or 3 years studying Japanese, like you can't read everything. You go to the supermarket and it takes such a long time to figure out like what that is, what you just have in your hand. It's like, what's the difference between this kind of milk and that kind of milk? Like, what's the kind of the difference between this tofu and that tofu and all that stuff? It's like, where do I get this and where do I get that? You're looking for stuff and then you realize they don't have it in Japan, right? Like good old, like German bread.
Right, know? Right. Yeah, it's funny that, you know, coming from Thailand, where if you go into a supermarket in Thailand, anywhere that's kind of populated by many foreigners, most things are in English. So when I came here to Japan, it was difficult not being able to read anything.
Yeah, that's one of the biggest challenges, I think.
Was it difficult when you got here to suddenly hear the Japanese instead of what you were studying in Germany?
Of course, there's a big gap between like study book, like what you have in your books, that kind of Japanese, and the Japanese your teachers tell you. Because like, of course, it's proper Japanese, but people on the street, they don't really speak proper Japanese, right? They have slangs, then they don't speak so clearly, and then maybe they're from other area like Kansai, then they have like Kansai-ben that's totally different, use different words. And of course, they speak faster than your teacher.
What is the reaction that you get from the Japanese people? Because you work in a Japanese company now, right? Yeah. And your Japanese is obviously pretty good. What's the reaction that you get from Japanese people when you're speaking Japanese to them?
Some of them are confused. And some are like, of course, they really appreciate it. They're like, wow, you speak Japanese so well. That's great, right? And then I'm always like, yeah, I'm still not perfect, but I'm working on it, right?
Do you ever get where you speak Japanese to them and they respond to you that they don't speak English?
To me personally, it hasn't happened yet, but like to some of my friends, it happened. They asked for directions in like Japanese, like perfect Japanese, because they've been here a long time, and then they get the reactions like no English. Right. Like that's why I'm speaking to you in Japanese, right?
The Japanese are so trained to just hear English from foreigners, they don't realize that you're speaking to them in exactly. Japanese.
It's like, it can't be that a foreigner is speaking Japanese.
Right. Can't be. What's it like working in a Japanese company?
It's an interesting experience, really. I'm learning a lot every day, and it's so different. And I was like, this hierarchy inside the company from like the top to the bottom is really, really strict. And as I'm really new to the company, I'm the lowest in the hierarchy, right?
Right.
And you don't have to say, like, you only have to listen and do what they tell you. Mm. You don't have to say your opinion. Sometimes you're not even allowed to say your opinion, right? Mm. Keep it to yourself. Just stick to the rules, do it, and that's it.
Tell me about the senpai-kohai relationship that exists in many Japanese companies.
Senpai-kohai is a part of the Japanese culture. It's really deeply embedded. It's like the people who are your seniors, you have to pay them respect, of course, but they're responsible for you, so they take care of you. They provide their network for you and give advice to you. And on the other hand, well, you have to pay respect and, well, you have to listen to what they say, basically.
So it's like a superior?
Superior, yeah.
Superior is the senpai?
Yes.
And junior is the
kohai.
Yeah. And so the junior pays respect to the senior.
Yeah.
And the senior takes care of the junior.
Exactly.
Are you assigned this person when you go to a Japanese company? Do they tell you, hey, this is your senpai? Or
no.
How does that work?
It's like everyone who's older, that usually it's like you enter the company when you're 22 and then you work for the same company the whole time. So basically when you're 22 and enter the company, everyone there is your senpai because they're all there longer than you.
Right.
Everyone is in the same company or the same place longer than you is your senpai.
Right. Even if like they're the same age as you?
Yeah.
Is it like an age thing or is it just length of time working in a company?
Well, before that, it was basically the same because you started. It was a pretty rigid system. You entered the company when you're 22, no question, and then you work there until you're 60, and then you retire. Right now, it's a little loose, so you have people like switching jobs and stuff, changing companies, and then even then, of course, people who are they might be younger than you or the same age, but they're in the same company longer than you are. Then they're a senpai. They know how everything works, and they're responsible for teaching you how it works.
Okay. So when do you move up? When someone else joins the company below you?
Yeah.
And you become their senpai?
Exactly.
Ah, interesting system.
Well, and everyone else is still there.
Right.
They're my senpai and my kohai's senpai still, of course.
Is it tough to work in a rigid environment like that? What if you disagree with your senpai? Can you?
Well, you keep it to yourself.
What do you mean? You don't share your opinions here?
You have to be careful how you express your opinion and how you say, and if you disagree with your supervisor, of course you should be careful with that about that even in your home country in like Europe or America. But if you disagree with your coworkers, your senpai, you should be careful. It's like instead of saying like I'm sorry, but I think that's wrong, you should be like I don't know about that. Yeah, of course, I'm sure you can do it this way, but maybe there might also be another option.
Right.
Put it that way, like
you say, like I'm sure we could do it this way, but there might be this other option that I'm sure you already considered and thought about.
Exactly.
So please tell us. About your thoughts on this other option, which I'm sure you already thought about before me.
Exactly. That's how you should put it. That's perfect. Perfectly prepared for working at a Japanese company.
Great. I'm all set to be a robot salaryman. I just need my black suit. Do you get any kind of special treatment, whether negative or positive, because you're gaijin? Like a Japanese person in your similar position, would they be kind of treated the same, or do you get a little bit different consideration?
I think I get a special treatment because I'm relatively new, but I don't get a special treatment because I'm not Japanese. What I realized is that when you reach a certain level of fluency in Japanese, they expect you to behave Japanese, actually.
Oh, really?
That's what you get. Yeah.
Right.
Because they mistake language fluency for like cultural fluency. Right. That's what happens. That's what I realized then.
Right.
Yeah, usually when you study Japanese, you'll learn about the culture as well, right? But that doesn't mean that you become like culturally fluent. And even if you understand the culture, there might be some things where you don't want to adjust to. Like, mm-hmm. It's like, okay, I understand that, mm-hmm. but that's not for me. It's like, I'm still not Japanese, right?
Would you say it's almost, in some ways, it's almost harder to be culturally fluent than it is to be fluent in the language?
Yeah, I'd say so. Because there's so many aspects in daily life, even that even if you're fluent like on a language level, you understand everything, you can read everything, but there's so many things that you just don't know because you didn't, like, I didn't grow up here.
Right.
Like, so a lot of the, like, games kids play, I don't know them. Like, Japanese, I don't know, idols, celebrities, I don't know them. I know some who are on TV now, but I don't know them, like, from 5 years ago, right? So a lot of insider stories, you just don't know them.
I think also, too, is that Japan is such a rigid culture. And the children who grew up here, the ones who grew up here, they have this rule book ingrained into their head for almost every situation in their life from a child. You know, it's like they're given this big book on how to be Japanese. And in this situation, you do this. In this situation, you do this. So to them, it's second nature. They know all that.
Yeah.
And it's hard for them to understand why you don't know that.
Yeah.
Especially when you speak fluent Japanese.
Yeah.
Like, why don't you get it?
Yeah, exactly.
And they don't realize how difficult it is and how sometimes strange it is that this culture is regulated so much by rules.
Yeah, exactly.
So tell me about your website there. You got a website called gettojapan.com. And obviously, you've based this website on your experience living here and working here. And you guys have come up with a 6-step process to help people who want to come to Japan.
And study Japanese.
And study Japanese. Can you walk us through that process?
Yeah, because we structured the process actually the way it is when you start studying Japanese. You find out first you should get your motivation done, right? You should think about, like, why do you want to study Japanese? Do you really want to study Japanese, or do you just want to, like, study Japanese? For example, we're talking about, like, good and bad motivators. Like, we're personally not a big fan of it, of course. If you like it, it's okay. But if you only want to study Japanese to understand your favorite anime or manga in Japanese, I'm not sure if that motivation is going to last for a long time, really help you to reach really fluency. Then from that, you look at your options. Like, what options do you have? If you want to go to Japan, what options do you have? You have, like, the JET program. You can go here and do an internship. You can study here at the Japanese language school. You can study at a Japanese university. You can work here. You can get sent here by your company. So many options. You have scholarships from your home country, maybe. You have scholarships from the Japanese government. There's so many options for you, and we just want to show you the options. Like, you can do this, you can do that. That's good about this, that's good about that. But there might be also downsides. Please consider that. Then the next thing is playing yourself into the study materials. Like, what kind of options do you have if you want to study Japanese? Like, you can go to regular classes. You can take online classes, you can use regular online resources, you can take offline, you can use offline resources like regular programs like Rosetta Stone. You can use textbooks, and they all have like advantages and disadvantages. We're going to tell you about that, and even about some like unconventional methods like listening to Japanese music, watching drama, singing karaoke maybe. And
what are your thoughts on that? You know, because, I mean, being able to learn Japanese by watching anime or dramas is kind of a bit of a controversial and yet popular topic. Some people say you can, some people say you can't. What are your thoughts on that?
I'd say yes to drama, because that's like, it's about real people. That's how usually people talk.
Right.
I think watching drama is one of the best ways. After you reach a certain level already, because you need like a good basis. But for anime, I'd rather recommend drama, because that's not how people talk. So if you only pick up your Japanese through watching anime, you sound like
a cartoon character.
Yeah, that's, no one talks like that. You know, I'm sorry. Or you sound like you start imitating some people, like characters, like Yakuza characters, and you sound like Yakuza. Do you
right.
actually want that? I don't, you
right.
know. So, of course, you can enjoy anime. You can enjoy them in Japanese, but I wouldn't pick up all my Japanese from that.
You know, one of the biggest fears that people have is Japan is very expensive. And I think that kind of puts off a lot of people coming to Japan. They think, oh, it's going to cost me millions and millions of dollars. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on that? Is Japan really expensive? Is it only for the super rich who can come here?
No, of course, now with the strong yen, it's maybe not the best timing to come now.
Right.
But I mean, if you have some income here in Japan as well through some part-time job, you can work, I don't know, you can work at like fashion stores. I, for example, did a part-time job at H&M. You can do that. You can teach. That's what a lot of people do. You can teach English or whatever language you speak. And if you have some income here in Japan, then even if the yen is so strong like it is now, it's not really important. But I mean, the biggest piece, of course, the biggest chunk for your expenses is your rent. Because right. Living really close to like downtown Tokyo, wherever that might be, it's really expensive. Even if you get a small place, it's more expensive than your home country, most likely.
And not only that, but I believe I covered this on a previous show, is that to get your apartment initially is very expensive. You may look online and go, wow, this place is fantastic. It's got everything I want. And the rent is like, you know, only $700, $800 a month. But you don't realize that for the first, when you first move in, you may have to spend over $3,000 just to get into that apartment. So I definitely think that saving up as much money as you can before you get here is key.
Of course, that's key, of course. You should save up a lot of money, then calculate a little bit. What I did before I came last year was I made it like really an Excel sheet and put in all the expenses. I was like, okay, I'm going to have this and that much that amount of money a month. Then how much can I spend for my rent? Then I'm going to pay... I need internet in my place. I need a phone. How much is that going to cost? How much is gas, electricity, water? How much is that going to cost? I asked some people who are here already. I had my experience from before. And then you calculate and it's like, okay, I need that amount of money a month to like live really in Japan. And then you see if you really need to find a part-time job or not, or if you maybe you can... if you see your savings are not enough, you can look for scholarships or some other like financial support from your government or the Japanese government.
I noticed looking online in many of the job listings that the average salary for an English teacher is around 250,000 to 300,000 yen per month. In your opinion, could someone live off of that in Tokyo?
Yeah, you can.
Really?
Good question, yeah.
Huh. So rent would be about maybe 700-800. And then if you budget, transportation is going to be a big cost, obviously, depending on how far you have to travel.
But usually the company pays for transportation, apart from the 250 or 300,000 yen.
Right. So getting a basic English teaching job, if you're frugal and you take care of your money, is enough to live in Tokyo.
Yeah, no question.
Wow,
I mean, the average Japanese person, when they just graduate from university, they end a company, they start with 200,000.
Right.
Then they pay tax and some end with like 180,000 or even less.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Yes.
But they have like a really small apartment, right?
Some still live with the parents.
Right,
they
right,
have
right.
to pay rent.
Right, right. I think the biggest cost in Japan is just the getting started.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Initial cost is pretty high.
Right. So that's kind of the initial barrier to many people, is that if you need to save up a good chunk of money to get here and pay for everything to get set up.
Yeah.
Once you get set up and you can get a job, then it's actually not too expensive. In my experience, it hasn't been much more expensive than cities I've lived in Europe or even my home country in Vancouver. I find transportation is a little bit more, but food costs and everything else is about relatively the same. So what tips would you offer for new person looking to come to Japan? What's your number one top tip that you would suggest to them?
My number one top tip is study Japanese before you come to Japan. Study a few lines, at least learn how to say hello, how to say thank you, and really like basic things, because Japanese people, they really appreciate it. They're really thankful. It shows respect. I mean, in a country that's so, like, where you find respect so deep embedded in the culture, it's really important, and I really strongly recommend to learn a little bit of Japanese before you come.
And what would you suggest would be the best way for people to pick up a few of those phrases? What method would you suggest?
on that case, like for really, really the simple greetings, you can even like try to remember them on the flight. But of course, you should start when you're in your home country and learn as much as you can. Take some beginner classes. If you're totally newbie and don't speak any Japanese at all, take some beginner classes.
Do those PIMSLR or Rosetta Stone programs, do they help?
I think it helps, but I wouldn't rely only on that. I would also look into some textbooks, of course.
And I think classes are actually really important because being able to interact with an actual Japanese person who can correct your accent and whatnot is always a huge help.
So, yeah, it is.
Yeah, I definitely think that being able to speak a little bit of language here makes a big difference. And I think it also, what it does is it breaks the ice with the Japanese a little bit.
Yeah.
Because they're so shy, but they're so helpful. Yeah. So they want to help you, but they don't want to make a mistake in helping you.
Yeah.
So their safety net is just not help you. But if you can kind of break the ice a little bit and you just speak just a little bit of Japanese, you'd be surprised at how kind and helpful they can be. Actually, I had that experience a few weeks ago when I had to have an emergency dental repair on my tooth. And I was at the train station. I can't remember what train station it was, but I didn't have any idea where to go to connect to my next station. And this like old Japanese guy came up to me and asked me where I wanted to go. And of course, he said it all in Japanese and I understood what he said. And so I kind of showed him where I wanted to go. And he walked all the way to the other train line where I needed to go. And I felt really bad because he had to walk all the way back to where he was going. But I mean, if he hadn't helped me, I wouldn't have made my appointment on time, you know. So I definitely think that picking up the language here is really, really important. My top tip for anybody moving to Japan is try to get a phone number any way you can. And ironically, it's actually really difficult to try to get a phone number here. I did a show a few weeks ago with a gentleman who runs mobileinjapan.com, and we talked about how difficult it is to get a number here. Even if you have an unlocked phone, you can't just bring it here and buy a SIM card and plunk it in. Typically, to get a SIM card, you'll need a contract. Not even that many places even have it. But if you can find one, you'll usually need some kind of contract. They'll want to see what kind of visa you have. But in my experience here, almost everything that I've done for my apartment requires a phone number. Even the moving company, they want to know what your phone number is. And they're so freaked out when you don't have a number. Because this is a country where there's more mobile phones than people.
Yeah.
And the average is 2.1 phones per one person. So they think it's very strange when you don't have a phone number. And so I've found that almost everything that I need to do here, I need a phone number. So there are a few places online where you can rent SIM cards. One of them is called bmobile.com. And another one is called Global Advanced Communications. I've used both of those companies before. And I'll link to those on my website. But my suggestion for anyone coming here is try to get a phone number as soon as you can, because it seems to make things a whole lot easier in helping you get set up here.
You can actually rent a phone at the airport for at least a few weeks or months.
Oh, really?
Maybe even for a long time, but then it gets too expensive. But you can rent a phone there, and then you have a phone number.
Right.
You can do that when you just arrive in Japan.
Well, that's great. That's great. Thanks, Fab. Thanks for coming on the show. I really appreciate it. I got to say, moving to Japan here has been a really eye-opening experience for me because it was a lot harder than I anticipated, especially coming from Thailand. I mean, because to get set up in Thailand is so easy. You can get an apartment, you can get a mobile phone, you can get internet, you can get anything done right away. I definitely recommend if anyone is coming to Japan to check out your website, gettojapan.com. And you guys are working on an ebook, I understand?
Exactly, yeah.
So because the more information, the more help that you can get from locals, from people who live here, will definitely make your transition a lot easier.
And then we are your senpai.
And then you're my senpai. That's awesome. Well, great. Thanks, Fab. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks again to Fab for coming on the show. If you are interested in finding out more information about moving to Japan, visit his website at gettojapan.com. Join me next week when I'll be talking to a gentleman named Bobby Judo, who has a very popular cooking show here in Japan. He's going to talk about how he got to Japan and how he managed to get his own cooking show on Japanese television. So all of you who are interested in getting on Japanese TV, I highly recommend checking out next week's show. That's it. Thanks for listening, everyone. I'm Anthony Joe, and bye-bye.